Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Elena Santigade, and listeners, today I'm going to start with a little personal anecdote. So I was born and raised mostly in New York City. Then my family moved to Michigan and then North Carolina for a brief stint. And throughout that flux, our family had one constant, the state of Wisconsin. My dad is from the North Woods, and I spent nearly every non-school moment there as a kid. So not a huge surprise that I have an enduring passion for cheese, right? So if you know Wisconsin, then you know Roth Cheese. Roth Cheese has been a long-running history of both importing and producing cheese, and I'm really glad to have Rob Fry, Director of Operations, calling in directly from America's Dairyland today. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to chat on air.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
So first off, let's talk cheese. For, here in New York, we do get some Roth cheeses, but I know that, you know, we have listeners from not only all over the U.S., but actually all over the world, including a big contingency in Japan, which is pretty amazing. So in terms of the cheeses that you guys are making and selling at Roth, from my take on it, you've got the Grand Cru, which is Alpine style. We have the Private Reserve, which is also an Alpine-style cheese. Grand Queso is one of my personal favorites, I have to say. And then I also love the Buttermilk Blue. So what am I missing? Those are my faves there. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the selection that you guys are producing these days at Roth?
Yeah, so we have quite a bit of a selection. We do somewhere between 15 to 20 different recipes and formats. Definitely Grand Queso is a favorite of mine.
So good. Listeners, if you haven't had the Grand Queso, it's hand-rubbed with cinnamon and paprika. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
And it's got this basket weave. It's just really gorgeous, and it's delicious.
Yeah, a lot of the cellar cheeses that we have, the Roth Private Reserve, which is aged about a minimum of 8 months. And then, of course, our grand champion World Cheese Contest, Grand Cru Sirtois, is also a favorite of mine.
I just had some of that this weekend.
Yeah, it's aged a minimum of 9 months. And there's just a lot of things and care that go into having that product turn out after 9 months.
Yeah, it's just such a complex flavor with that one. I mean, really classic Alpine style make. And is that one also, that's made in a copper vat. Do I have that right?
Yep, correct.
So it's really super traditional in that sense. And that is a pasteurized milk, but the Private Reserve is raw milk. Is that right?
Yeah, it's what we call a heat treated product. And it's aged in the state of Wisconsin. It's going to be aged for more than 60 days, which it's well beyond that.
Right.
But it turns out it's a lot of the complexity, the earth tones, and umami flavors really come through in that product.
Yeah, super savory. It's like a ramen broth cheese. Okay, so then Buttermilk Blue, is that... are you making other blue cheeses these days? Or the buttermilk for me is the blue I could just eat by the spoonful, and I have.
Yep. The blue cheese is probably my favorite out of all the blues here in the States, and that's something that's, like you said, it's just creamy. It melts in your mouth and goes really good on salads.
Mm-hmm. And then you have sort of a newcomer to the line. Am I right that the soft ripened Monroe is kind of a newer cheese on the scene for you guys?
Yeah, it was something that we developed. It's really a smaller format, about a 2-pound wheel. And it's something that's a wash drying. It's only aged for about 2 to 4 weeks, and the product turns out really, really nice and creamy, and has really kind of a mellow flavor to it, but it's something that we're pretty proud of.
So in terms of, you know, Wisconsin cheese, there aren't a huge... It's a state that a lot of people, I think, associate with cheddars, of course. But for me, I tend to think of Wisconsin as, you know, you've got fresh cheese curds and you have longer aged cheeses like the, you know, the classics, the cheddars, and also, you know, with your Alpine style cheeses and you know, longer aged in that sense as well. Like soft ripened, smaller format cheeses aren't so prevalent in Wisconsin. So I was really excited to see that you guys had developed that one. What was your thinking behind that? You know, why go in that direction?
Well, I mean, basically from a wash drying category, we really want to own that category. And we have a lot of things that have a lot of age on them. Mm-hmm. They sit in the cellar for quite a while and they get taken care of. But we really wanted something that was kind of a quicker maturing cheese. Mm-hmm. Soft rind was something, or a soft bodied cheese was something we were looking at for quite a while. And we were able to develop this product. And I think it's going to go really well in our portfolio. And it's something that the customers are really going to enjoy.
Yeah, I'm excited to try it. I haven't had any yet myself. And is it washed rind as well, or is it more of a bloomy rind of cheese?
No, it's a washed.
It's
rind
washed.
Cheese.
Okay, got it. Yep. Yeah, I got to check this out. Sounds delicious. So, what else did we miss? Any categories of what's going on these days at Roth Cheese?
Well, we definitely do have our fresh cheeses, the Fontanas and the Havartis. The Goudas, and it's constantly ever-changing and developing depending on what the consumer and the customers are looking for. Mm-hmm. But there's anywhere from, you know, like I said, the Havartis to the Washerang cheeses, and now the Monroe cheese is coming out. So
right.
Quite a variety.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm sure it's fun for the cheesemakers and the staff also to have a variety of stuff to work with. You know, it's like exercising different muscles in a sense.
Absolutely.
And, you know, all the styles that you listed for the most part all really do relate to the, you know, the origin story of Roth cheese, which I know having, you know, spent so much time in Wisconsin, but I think a lot of our listeners might not fully know sort of the history of how Roth cheese first started in Switzerland and then, you know, came to the U.S. and eventually landed in Wisconsin. Can you paint that picture for us a little bit?
Yeah, so the history of Roth case started in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And in 1911, Otto Roth moved to America on the East Coast and was set up an Otto Roth & Company. Mm-hmm. And this was a company that was receiving the imported cheeses from Switzerland and then selling them here in the States. As time went on, things changed and it stayed in the family. But then in 1991, two brothers, Ulrich and Felix Roth, decided that it was going to it would be wise to set up shop in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And instead of importing the cheeses, actually import the technology and the recipe from Europe. Mm. So along with their cousin, Fermo Jekyll, they set up here in Wisconsin because of the abundance of the good milk supply.
Right.
It resembled a lot of Nuglaris was a place that a lot of the Swiss settlers settled. And the region was very familiar to them with, it had the essence of Switzerland. So it was kind of like home away from home.
Right. And actually it's, the area of Wisconsin where you guys are making cheese is referred to as Little Switzerland. That's true, right?
Yep, correct.
It's Greene County, I believe. And is Monroe, I assume Monroe, the cheese, is named after Monroe, the town, in the classic sense.
Yeah, and that's kind of, in 1847 is when Switzerland was founded from a large group of settlers from the canton of Glarus in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And it kind of grew from there. The tradition's been passed down from generation to generation with cheese making. Right. And it just resembled a good hearty tradition of the Swiss settlers here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really is a little community. There's also good skiing in Little Switzerland, as I know. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're traveling around the U.S., you can't quite make it to Switzerland, there is a little pocket of it there in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So then fast-forwarding to modern day, you're now working with a co-op of dairy farmers, the Rolling Hills Dairy, right?
Correct.
And it seems like from what I understand and what I've read, it seems like Roth Cheese has really grown along, as well as the dairy co-op that you're working with has grown. Like both, it seems like a really synergistic, is that even a word? I'm not sure, but a lot of synergy there in the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. It started with about 11 dairy farmers, and today it's up over 100 plus. And as we've grown, they've grown. We've had a great partnership with them, and I tell you, it starts with the high quality of milk and mm-hmm. how the farmers treat their herd and take care of the herd, which makes great milk, which makes great cheese.
Do you, now I know that the milk from the Rolling Hills Dairy is all sourced within 60 miles of where you're making cheese, which is pretty incredible. And that also the average herd size of the farms is pretty small. Like, if you think of the national average being at about 190 listeners, for those who might want to gauge this, it seems like at Rolling Hills, would you say it's between 100 and 150?
Yeah, it's still really relatively small
yeah.
To mid-size on the dairy farmers with the farms that we have within that co-op. So it's about 100 to 150 cows, probably second, third generation family farmers mm-hmm. That have just smaller herd size and, not industrial size.
Right. And, I was actually wondering, thinking of the co-op growing, I was wondering like how much of that are first generation. I mean, first generation dairy farmers are a pretty small, that's a pretty small group these days in the U.S.
It is.
So it sounds like it's more of just dairy farmers from the area who have been brought into the co-op over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good things that happen with the co-op. They've been able to manage the co-op in a way that brings value added to the farm. Just the way that the customers and consumers want to know more about, farm-to-fork movement that's been happening and understanding where their cheese is coming.
Right. And they're also doing liquid milk production. Like if you're in Greene County, are you finding Rolling Hills Dairy milk in your local shop?
I think the Rolling Hills co-op is pretty diversified. I mean, they have mm-hmm. a lot of customers besides us that they actually have their milk shed that they distribute to. Mm-hmm. Some of it may go into fresh milk, some of it may go into yogurt, but I think a good portion of it goes into the cheese industry.
Got it. Very interesting. Okay. Wow, that flew by, and we're actually going to take a quick break now. So, Rob, hang tight. Listeners, stay with us, and we'll be back in just a moment for more from Rob Fry of Roth Cheese.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Sur Choix was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Rob Fry of Roth Käse in Wisconsin. So, Rob, in the first half of our show, you know, we talked a lot about the history of Roth cheese and sort of brought us up to speed in with to modern day and the list of cheeses that you guys are producing now. And one thing I'm really curious about, since you have been at Roth for how long have you worked at Roth Cheese?
Well, it's going on 16 years.
16
now.
Years. That's amazing. That's, for a cheese professional in New York City, 16 years at one place is like completely foreign to me. So it's very inspiring to hear that. And it's exciting because with that and with such a change in the cheese making sort of landscape in the U.S. over that amount of time, I'm really excited that I get to pick your brain here. So, one thing I'm curious about is the cheesemaking community specific to Wisconsin. You know, you guys have the Wisconsin dairy farmers and, you know, the former Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board as this really unique entity, it seems. And I'm curious to hear a bit about, from your vantage point at Roth Cheese, what that has meant to you and how you've sort of participated in those statewide efforts to promote cheesemakers around Wisconsin.
Yeah, we do. The cheese industry is kind of unique, I think, in that way that a lot of us are competitors in some way, shape, or form, but also neighbors in the fact that we do help each other out. You run into an issue, you run into a problem. Everybody understands those challenges, and they're not afraid to help out their neighbor.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a huge defining characteristic. The sharing of knowledge and resources, and it's interesting. You know, if like one cheese in the neighborhood has a smoker, then a competitor from down the road might even smoke their cheese at that facility.
Sure. Absolutely.
And I think it's part of what makes the business so human in a way. And in other industries, when you're never really in front of your competitors face to face, it's definitely a different feeling, I think. Mm-hmm. So interesting. And there's another interesting component that's specific to Roth in that you are owned by Emmy, which is a larger company based in Switzerland. And that's sort of a newish development. How does that work as a business model?
You know, looking at exactly a partnership from European style recipes and a co-op owned company, that it just made real good sense to have this marriage it just really worked out really well because it was nothing that we had to learn.
Right.
European recipes, because we're already doing them, and I think that dynamic has worked out well.
And the co-op owned company, that's Emmy that you're referring to, right?
Correct.
So how does that work? What does that exactly mean? You know, it's interesting because we've just somewhat recently had the folks from a small retail co-op, the Park Slope Food Co-op, here in the studio, and I'm thinking a lot about cooperative businesses in general, just as the landscape seems to get tougher and tougher. So what does it mean for Emmy to be a cooperative business?
I think basically you're just looking at the stakeholders, and the stakeholders are, you know, the dairy farmers of Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, marketing the milk, and the company is abroad, just having a return on their investment and knowing that there's other markets in there from an international standpoint that we can get into and sell great cheese to, and that right. I think it works out really well.
Right. So you have the recent example of Emmy acquiring also Cowgirl Creamery, and then Land O'Lakes most recently acquiring Vermont Creamery. So I feel like at this year's American Cheese Society conference, there's going to be a lot of great discussion about, you know, these decisions from a financial point of view, from a sustainability, you know, business sustainability point of view. And it's, I'm curious sort of to get your take on the before and the after, since you were with Roth before the partnership with Emmy, and then have stayed throughout. So, you know, like from your vantage point, what do you see as, it sounds like it was a really natural alignment, and from like sort of day-to-day business operations, do you see pros, cons, you know, things that the business had to get used to in Wisconsin? What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think that early on in the Roth case days, we were, you know, looking at specialty cheeses in European. And in 1991, when they set up shop here in Wisconsin, most people were doing commodities.
Right.
So to get into a specialty category and, you know, make products that are aligned with European recipes was kind of unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
So then looking forward, and then Emmy comes into the picture, I think it really made a great story from a standpoint that it was a natural alignment with the European recipes and the niche markets that we see in the state with the U.S. consumers, you know, strategically from looking at the goat cheese industry and mm-hmm. just aligning with some of those specialty things, I think it was just a really good marriage, and I don't think it could have happened any better.
Right. Cool. So shifting gears a little bit to talk about you specifically and your experience and your roles within, you know, Roth Cheese, I assume that you've had a few different roles over time. So how have you developed in your position there at Roth Cheese? How did you first start as part of the company?
Yep. So I first started, in 2001, basically as a quality compliance officer.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, I became the plant manager here at the Monroe Manufacturing Facility.
Okay.
And did that until probably about 5-6 years ago, and then became a plant manager at our new facility in Platteville, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And then became director of operations a couple years later.
Got it.
That's all led into just, you know, seeing this company grow from what it was, you know, 16 years ago to what it is today has been a reward.
Yeah, I'm sure. And how, so you've added an additional plant, and that are, is it two plants now that you guys are making cheese at?
Yep, two plants here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a joint venture with a third plant.
Got it. Very neat. And so how many employees do you guys have at this point?
Total, I think we have probably about 225 employees.
All based in Wisconsin.
No, not all based in Wisconsin. Some of them are from the East Coast too, or the West Coast, sorry.
Got it. Cool. So it's, you know, I was thinking about your title and your position, the uniqueness of the vantage point that you have. You know, we talk to a lot of sort of frontline retail staffers and cheesemakers here on Cutting the Curd. And I'm really excited to get the chance to sort of open up like more of a management perspective for our those of our listeners who, well, cheese industry or not, who, you know, have been on those front in those frontline sort of roles, but may never have, you know, worked in the back office, so to speak. So I'm curious if you don't mind sort of shedding some light on, like, what is your day-to-day like? Like, what does a director of operations do? I think a lot of our folks might be really curious to hear about that, and kind of maybe we can kick off a little visualization for some ambitious cheese folks.
No, it's a good question. I think from a standpoint of a day-to-day operations, there's always small hurdles or challenges that you run into that in this position now as a director of operations, it's it's definitely something that your role is to kind of align, you know, the plants and with the vision of the company and making sure that we don't get too close-sighted about losing sight of the vision and, you know, removing those roadblocks for the frontline employees.
Interesting. I like, you know, that sort of touches on an idea that I always love of like a servant leadership kind of an idea of like how you can make your staff job, like the job of your frontline staff easier, more seamless, more, you know, smoother. And I think that usually winds up working out really well as a management approach.
Definitely.
So you mentioned, you know, I think that was a cool idea that a big part of even your day-to-day thinking is on the vision type level. I think that one thing so many of us can get caught up in are like the minutiae, the little details of, you know, the little fires that we're all putting out all the time. And it can be hard to take that step back and really make sure that progress isn't happening just day to day, but also on the larger scale for like, are we moving forward as a business? Are we moving forward as an industry? It's really interesting to hear that. And so I'm curious if you don't mind sharing a little bit, like what, how would you define the, you know, Roth Cheese vision, you know, medium term, short term? I'm not, what does vision even mean as you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, future looking. When you talk about vision, it's, I mean, our goal is to be the best specialty cheese producer in the U.S. and in the world. And that's a tall
great goal. Big goal.
that's a big goal.
That's a great goal to have, though. I mean, if it's like if we're all aiming that high, good things are definitely going to happen, right?
Absolutely. If you keep that in the forefront and on the day-to-day, filter that into decision-making that happens and ask yourselves, is this going to make us the best specialty cheese producer? I think you'll stay aligned with that.
Yeah, it's like a really, it's a clear lens to look through in that sense, you know, of like, if you're looking through, a big part of your job as director of operations is looking at the operations of the company through a lens of, is this helping us to achieve this one big overarching goal? It's an interesting, it's like a really different set of glasses there.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, it does come with challenges from time to time.
But, yeah, I'm sure.
You know, based on what the market's doing, what the customer's doing. But definitely it keeps you aligned with, you know, the vision.
Yeah. Yeah. Really nice. Really neat to hear about. I think, you know, at any sort of scale of business that totally applies. So very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, I can't believe it, but we're already coming up on our almost to the end of our time together here. I have one kind of fun question that I wanted to throw in here at the end because I've been reading a book called Miracle Mornings, and it's a really short book. It's I don't know if you've heard of it or listeners, if you're curious, it's like a really quick read, but I'm dying to ask everybody I come across now what like their morning routine is, especially if they're successful, which I would definitely put the successful stamp on you, Rob. And you seem to have like such great longevity at Roth and, you know, a real handle on what you guys are doing. So do you mind telling us a little bit about your morning routine?
The morning routine usually starts with a cup of coffee.
Nice. Black and, or do you do you put a little cream and sugar in there?
I do put a little cream and sugar in there.
A little Rolling Hills dairy cream.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And usually then you're checking, you know, the top three things that you want to focus on for the day. You know, I have a belief that if you check off, you can make a list of three things each day and accomplish that. By the end of the week, you've got 15 things accomplished.
Yeah, totally.
And then, you know, usually check on the market, see what the market's doing with the cheese and the milk. And then by that time, it's time to hit the ground running and you've started your day.
Huh. I really like that idea of the three. It's like such a achievable number, you know, such a a tangible and reasonable number of things that you could accomplish in a day. And you're right. Like, you know, it's back to that idea of like little things really do add up.
Absolutely.
Very neat. Well, thanks for indulging me on that personal You're obsession welcome. I have now with everybody's morning routine. I don't know if I'm quite ready to share mine. Wow. Thank you so much for joining us, Rob. We're out of time here, which I'm sad about, but I hope to visit you in little Switzerland at some point soon on my next trip to Wisconsin.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome.
Well, great. Super fun to get to know you a bit more and really interesting to hear about that, you know, how Roth Cheese has really grown over the years and just super fun to hear your take on it since you've been there through it all. So thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Elena Santigade and we'll be back next week with more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. I've been so blue. I prayed each night for someone.